Welcome to Theatre Voice. My name's Judy Herman, and today I'm talking to Arthur Milner, whose play Fax continues at the Finborough Theatre until the 23rd of March. Arthur, a Jewish Canadian playwright from Montreal, writing a play that's set in Israel, Palestine. Should we set up the actual situation within what we call the situation in the Middle East?
It's inspired by an actual event, which is in the early 90s, the murder of an American archaeologist who was teaching in the West Bank, a guy named Albert Glock, which didn't receive much coverage at the time, although there was a book written about it by Edward Fox, I believe, a British writer. And I read that book, but I made my own story out of the murder. So in facts, in my play, I don't stick to the facts. There is the murder of an American archaeologist teaching in the West Bank. And it's been investigated before the play begins by a Palestinian inspector, detective. But he didn't get a lot of cooperation from the Israelis. It didn't really go far, his investigation. And now in my fantasy of it, there's been pressure from the Americans on the Israelis to investigate. And so an Israeli cop shows up and sets up a meeting with the Palestinian cop, and they've worked together before, they know each other, and he wants to reopen the case. So that's the setup for this play. The murder had taken place half a year before, and it's a cold case, I guess we would call it these days, when they begin to look at it.
You've set up a really interesting relationship between the Palestinian detective Khaled and Yossi, the Israeli detective. They know each other of old. So I wondered, from your point of view, as a Jew, it just seems so balanced between the two of them. They're both equally convincing and in their ways, sort of sympathetic.
Yes, I would say that's true. And, you know, it's many things are accidental that end up in plays, but I thought I knew I would have two cops. That was the first thought once I settled on the murder mystery and how to approach it. I was aware as I was writing it, well, let me put it this way. The character of Yossi, the Israeli Ashkenazi Jewish cop, I felt like I've known him all my life, and really I didn't have to do any research. I've been to Israel several times, met many people, but in a sense that's my background too, not Israeli, but Ashkenazi Jewish, and he's a liberal Jew, and you know, it was in me to write that. I didn't have a lot of confidence writing a Palestinian character. I've known Palestinians and I've been to the West Bank, but it's not the same thing. It's more research. But I'd read enough Palestinian writers and Arab writers to know my cop is going to be a rational human being who's trying to do a good job within the limitations of the possibilities and all that, and as is the Israeli cop. And so they both get down to work in that way with their own differences and their own disagreements, but they're both, I would say, mature individuals who can agree with each other without disagree with each other without it turning into a fight, and they can yell at each other without it being, I'm never talking to again, you know. They don't denounce each other. They confront each other often. So that for me, and as it has proved since for audiences, has been a very powerful part of the play. And also when we toured the West Bank with an Arabic production, I would say that is almost universally admired about the play is the nature of the relationship between those two guys. Now, sometimes people have seen it as too cozy, right? And they go, you present the liberal Israeli as too positive. Really, they're not that positive. And a kind of criticism from the left, as it were, among Palestinians. But that's definitely been a minority view. On the other hand, I would say I was writing this Palestinian cop But I found it, you know, he hit all the marks and it worked in terms of plot, but I found it a bit flat. Because I wasn't writing with confidence about him, it was a bit by numbers. And I gave it to a Palestinian-Canadian friend of mine to look at, and he really liked it. But he said, yes, you've left out some things. Like here, I think he would say that.
Can you give me any examples of that?
Okay. There's a lot of discussion about archaeology of the Middle East, and because it's an archaeologist who's been murdered. So he's trying to convince, the Palestinian is trying to convince the Israeli that the new research that archaeologists are doing is controversial. And to convince him of that, he gets the Israeli angry with the new kind of discoveries of archaeology. Well, my Palestinian friend said to me, you know, those same discoveries would also not be that easy for the Palestinian to take.
These are ones that give the lie to the apparent facts in the Bible.
That's right. You know, King David and Abraham and Moses and, you know, the whole history, the earlier part of the history of the Bible. So he said, Khaled seems to accept that so easily. And even if he did, he would not be so forthcoming with an Israeli Jew about that. He would be more circumspect. He would make it clearer that for the sake of argument he's raising things, not that he believes that Abraham never existed. And so that led, I went, oh, that's fascinating, because I had no idea about that. And he says, my friend Samer said to me, no, all these, you know, Abraham and Moses and Jesus as well are prophets, and they're mentioned, apparently, you know, Moses is mentioned many more times than Muhammad in the Quran. And so they're very important. And so to say that they never existed, a Muslim, a devout Muslim wouldn't do that, and even a secular Muslim would do it differently, and in also that in the Middle East, the word secular means something entirely different. So I brought that knowledge to the play and rewrote it. It wasn't a ton of stuff, but just different places where I could put in more color. And one of the things I said to Samer was, so what would a Palestinian say if you said, well, what do you think? And he'd say, he said, you know, Muslims have a saying, which is, you have your beliefs, I have mine. They just don't, it's not something they will readily discuss. And they is a broad generalization. There are exceptions, of course. But in general, they wouldn't so casually discuss it with someone they didn't know terribly well. And so that was introduced into the play.
Well, before we leave the Copts, I think he is quite full-blooded, Khaled. I don't think he's some sort of saint. You know, just because he's a Palestinian and maybe wrong is being done to the Palestinians, it doesn't come over like that at all. You've given him a very dry sense of humour, a way of coping with the horror of checkpoints, but you do allow him to paint a picture of how difficult it is to be a Palestinian, how he can't reopen the case, how every single time he wants to warm up this cold case, he can't without Yossi's help, and Yossi can cut through red tape, the Gordian knot of red tape, in a moment with a phone call. He knows everybody, he schmoozes everybody, and Khaled can't do that.
Well, it's funny, because in a certain sense the writing of that was just convenient to writing a detective story, but it's also true. And particularly Ashkenazi Jews of a certain age are related to the general. He calls up, he says, you do this or I'll call my uncle the general and he'll get on your case. And this is actually true-ish, you know, in Israeli Ashkenazi society, which for decades, a bit less so now, has dominated Israel, and people have connections. And then other Jews who are not Ashkenazi don't quite have the same connections, or at least didn't used to. And for Palestinians, they absolutely don't have those connections, and in the West Bank, obviously, even less. So even a cop who's trying to get some cooperation put on hold, kept at a checkpoint, waiting for this, waiting for that. I mean, that's actually true, and the Israeli cop just can make phone calls and get all these things looked after.
Yeah, so We have a good long time to get to know these two characters, Yossi and Khalid, rather brilliantly played by Philip Arditi and Michael Feast. And interestingly, I suppose we should just mention en passant that Michael Feast is playing Yossi, but he's not Jewish, and Philip Arditi is playing Khalid, and he actually is Jewish, so that's really very interesting, I think. And I think they do get that amazing joshing relationship going extremely well.
I mean, I hope that's partially in the writing, and I think they do a great job of it. When we did the first preview in Ottawa, so it was the first time in front of an audience 3 years ago, well, there was so much laughter in the first 20 minutes, 30 minutes, that I thought, okay, we have to stop this. Like, I was going to say to the director, you got to find a way to dampen this down. But no, it turned, like, you know, people were with them in the laughter. They have a nice, ironic humor between them, and they get along. And then, but as I said before, you know, they can fight, too. They can argue, too. But it doesn't change their relationship. And so the humor in it, I think, one woman said to me, did you put the humor in just, you know, to make it all easier to swallow? And I said, well, no, I put the humor in because I'm a funny person.
Well, I'll go with the second. Well, now let's talk a bit about what it is that we actually have to swallow.
Okay.
Because we haven't brought in Danny the settler yet. So, in a way, the dice are going to be loaded against Danny because we've heard so much about him by the time he comes in. And again, Paul Rattray's performance, I thought, was very interesting because there's an arrogance very often about people who have very, very firm beliefs that they believe everybody else is beneath contempt if they don't share their beliefs, or at least beneath them. And it sort of shows in a sort of strange smirk, which I think he had. I mean, it could have been anybody who had those sorts of beliefs, but in this particular case, it's the settler who really believes that the land, Eretz Israel, the land belongs to him by rights, by birthright, going back to the Bible.
Yes.
And he, again, isn't Jewish, so he was doing a good job there. So tell me about how you feel towards Danny, because this is this third character, and presumably you have to see them all 360 degrees.
In a way I found him the hardest to write because clearly I have next to no sympathy for him at all. So somehow you have to write a three-dimensional character, a human character, a real person, not a cardboard cutout. And I think I've succeeded fairly well. You know, somebody has said to me something like, well, we should see him with his family, you know, with P. And I go, well, it's just not, that's not where we meet him. I'm sure he's very nice to his children, but we don't see him in that context. We see him in this context. So what is that kind of character? First of all, he's a militant settler. He's not a settler who's there because the housing was cheaper. He's there because he believes in it. And so that's one kind of settler that I've picked, what would be called national religious. They're both nationalist and religious. And so he's that kind of settler. And then how do I present him in that context? What's he going to do when he's being interviewed? What's his response to the liberal Zionist Jew, Yossi? So you try and write for the reality of that situation, and then you hope for an actor who, like Paul, can do such a good job of rounding it out and making him feel, you know, not balanced, which I think is a false effort in a way, but rather real. That you believe, yes, I believe I've seen somebody who's real. He's been given a fair shot. And I think when you write political theater, as I do, as I have for many years, you know, it's a constant challenge and one you had better live up to. When you write naturalism, you'd better live up to it of presenting three-dimensional bad guys.
Yes, well, I suppose it may be a little unfair to call him a bad guy. Let's go back to this word, facts, because there does seem to be some evidence against him, or maybe he is slightly being framed, because I don't think it's actually proven that various allegations are made, but there is no conclusion. I don't want to give anything away, but yeah. We should probably go back to that title again, that word, facts.
Well, it, you know, choosing a title, of course, is sometimes you go, I'll call it Facts for Now, and then it sticks. There's an aspect of the title that people don't make the connection with, but there's the phrase Facts on the Ground, which is a phrase you often hear in Israel. And the whole strategy of the right wing in the territories was to put facts on the ground. And when we get enough settlements, when we have enough people living in the West Bank, those will be facts on the ground, and then it'll be too late to stop us. So this goes way back. And at one point, I almost thought of calling it Facts on the Ground, but you know, I like short titles, so I stuck to Facts. So that's one aspect of Facts, Facts on the Ground. And the other, of course, is the facts of the Old Testament and whether those are facts. The others are facts in the evidence that is presented. Policemen are always talking about facts, and one person's fact is another person's lie. So there's many aspects, and then it even gets us into a kind of Western notion of science versus, anti-scientific kind of anti-enlightenment arguments that I hint at in the play as well. So I think there's, 32 aspects of facts that are examined.
Oh, wow, you've actually counted them. That.
I haven't. I'm guessing, but
I thought a couple of really interesting points that come out of that. I think somewhere in the play you say that it's not a question of here is the Bible story, we know it happened, so we can find some proof for it. You really have to start with what can we find in the ground, not, oh, I'm looking for a relic of David from that era. Right. What have I got on the ground without my thinking about King David?
Right, I think it's briefly described that, 100 years ago, 150 years ago for sure, the then archaeologists would go with the Bible in one hand and walk around the Middle East going, okay, where did Moses stand? Where did Abraham live? And then at a certain point they started going, okay, let's pretend we don't know anything. And what can we find? And then, what they found was controversial.
Because it disproved the Bible rather than proved it.
Yes. It's very hard to prove that something didn't happen. So most of the nature of the evidence is, if this event had happened anywhere in the time as described in the Old Testament, we would have by now found evidence. And the fact that we didn't find, part of it is as simple as all these stories are recounted in the Bible about camels and caravans, and that, well, we know that the camel wasn't domesticated until 1,000 years later. So you know then that the story was written much later. So that it's and many towns that are described in the Old Testament, we know they didn't exist at that time. That's the kind of thing that modern archaeology can tell us that it couldn't tell us 200 years ago.
Well, going back to facts on the ground, there is quite a chilling speech that Danny makes, which sort of explains his shining complacency, that the policy is to start 10 settlements because you know that the Israeli authorities will clamp down, but they'll probably only manage to clamp down on one, and that will look like a victory for the authorities. But at least 5 of them will become facts on the ground.
Well, there's a book called Lords of the Land, written by 2 Israelis, which is a kind of history of the settlements. And I love that section. I know I wrote it, but I love it anyway, that you describe, because, here's a 600-page book that I compress into 4 sentences, and it's exactly that.
So we're going to hear that passage that you managed to boil down from 600 pages to 4 sentences.
Yeah. We learned from them. This is what we do, Mr. Yassin. Our movement establishes 10 new settlements. The army says 5 are illegal. We go to court. The court decides settlement number 9 is illegal and is to be evacuated. The television cameras gather. The army drags our children. Pregnant mothers yell anti-Semite and Nazi at Israeli soldiers. It's heartbreaking. And the whole world sees that the government opposes illegal settlement activity. The score? 9-1 for my team. Everybody wins except you. So I repeat, why should we kill your expert witness?
It's a very good boiling down.
No,
it's a bit chilling, more than chilling, isn't it? Now, This play has been performed in Canada, premiered in Canada. This is the British premiere, but you've also managed to tour it on the West Bank. So tell me a bit about how it was received on the West Bank.
Well, it's a long story. It was translated into Arabic and co-produced by a West Bank theater organization. And it played in 10 theaters in 9 cities. And, the legality of this is also technical because of those 9 cities, 5 were in the West Bank, 2 were in Israel, 1 was in Jerusalem, which by international law is still an international place that's not in either Israel or the West Bank, and the other is in occupied Syria in the Golan Heights, which is also illegal according to international law. So it's kind of funny to have to summarize it and go, well, you can't just say they're all in the West Bank and all in Israel or whatever. So having said that, and the reactions were different in different places. In a few places, we played in actual theaters, but often we were in community centers, sometimes community centers in refugee camps in the West Bank. Often in Jerusalem or in Bethlehem, they're pretty large towns and there's other events going on, but often we're the only show in town that night, and families would come with their children, and this is not a play aimed at 8-year-olds. So there was a lot of noise often during the shows. Families with young children, the children would get up and leave, and sometimes the parents would follow them. Teenagers would come and go out, get a Coke, come back, like if you were watching TV. Sometimes by the end of the show, half of the audience might be gone or a third, and then of the remaining 60 to 80 people left, they'd leap to their feet at the end of the play and applaud it thunderously. It took a while getting used to. And then almost every show we had a talk back afterwards. And the discussion was fascinating. And a common thread of the discussion. First of all, we had many people who stood up and said, I've never seen a play before. We had a lot of people who stood up and said, I've never seen a Jewish character on stage before or an Israeli character on stage before. And really in the West Bank, pretty much, except for me, I guess, the only Jews that they would see would be at soldiers at checkpoints. So it really was a new thing for many people. And I would say they were fascinated by seeing three-dimensional Israeli characters. The things being discussed were not new for them, but the angle it discussed was completely new. And, to hear a settler defending himself, to hear a sympathetic Israeli, and I love it when the people would argue with each other. Now, I don't speak Arabic, so things were translated for me by the actors who were up on stage with me. And I would love it, for example, somebody would say, I don't believe that an Israeli would ever defend a Palestinian against another Israeli, as Yossi does with respect to the settler. He clearly is taking Khalid's side. And they'd say, I don't believe that would ever happen. And then others would stand up and say, of course it would happen. There are sympathetic Israelis. And they would have that discussion. My favorite series of discussion, if I can describe it, of comments was, somebody says, it's the first time we've seen a real Israeli character on stage. And then somebody says, well, it's the first time I've seen a real Palestinian character on stage, which is a compliment of some sorts. And then somebody would say, it's not a real Palestinian character because you show an honest cops and we don't have any honest cops. And then that would create an argument. Of course we do. Yes, we do. I've known some. But I loved it when one woman said, well, it's theater. And even if we don't have people like that, it shows a model for how we should behave.
So did you ever get anybody saying, is it for you to portray a Palestinian? And because, you're a Jew, did anybody worry about the fact that you had actually written this Palestinian and say it wasn't true?
Never. Never. I never got a comment like that. Now, when I traveled around in the West Bank, people spoke to me in Arabic all the time. They thought I was an Arab, a Palestinian. But often in the talkbacks, people would say, why does a Canadian write about here? And I said, well, my father, you know, was an active Zionist in Montreal all his life, and that's the kind of home I grew up in. And when I decided I needed to write about this question, so that's why I did it. So I was announcing to, you know, 100 Palestinians in the West Bank that I was standing up there and I was Jewish, and people were a little nervous that I did that. Like, my colleagues sometimes were not quite sure how that would go. And Israelis were terrified that they thought I'd be taking my life in my hands. And in fact, there was not a murmur. It just was information. And whatever they felt inside, I don't know. But in 100 people there, they just were, that explains it. And off we went. It was great that way. It was warm and enthusiastic and welcoming.
And your cast, were they all from the Palestinian community?
They were all Palestinians. It's a bit tricky because depending on where you live, we needed to have a cast who could travel in Israel, in the West Bank. So that really meant Jerusalem-based actors, because they could go wherever. Whereas if we hired an actor who worked in the West Bank, they would have a lot of trouble getting into Israel. So, but they were all Palestinians. They were all Arabic speakers. I think it would be interesting to do a bilingual production, because the languages actually spoken in the play are Arabic and Hebrew. So to do one with both languages, perhaps with surtitles, would have been interesting.
Of course, you're talking about if you could have done it in Hebrew and Arabic. That would be interesting. It's a very charged issue in the play, the attitude of Danny the settler to Khalid, at least, well, for most of the time, certainly at first, is he won't speak to him, he won't speak Arabic, he won't acknowledge that he's a person, even.
Yes, and I think that's fairly accurate. Of course, not all the time, but in general. But he definitely would not accept his authority. That here was a police, they were in the West Bank, he was a West Bank policeman, you know, he wouldn't accept his legitimacy in any sense at all. And really, he has to be coerced into talking to Khalid.
Let's talk about the staging at Fimbra. The Fimbra Theatre is tiny, multi-award winning, but tiny. I've counted, I think it was sold out, and it's 40-something people in this particular configuration. And you talked about naturalism. Georgia Lowe's set was very naturalistic, and we were in that room. It's uncomfortable. There's no way for us to escape. I rather loved the water cooler because
right beside me.
Yeah, you know, you really felt, oh, well, perhaps I could get up and go and get some water from the water cooler myself. I don't know what sort of theatres it's been in Canada, but was that important to you, that tiny room? I mean, were you pleased with that?
Well, I knew it was a small room and a small audience, but it surprised me when I walked in, and I thought it was fabulous to... sometimes when you're so close, you feel embarrassed, like they might talk to you or something, or, you know, they might involve you. But no, this, you were right there, but you never felt threatened in that theatrical sort of way. And you were right in among the set. It was a beautiful use of the space. A fantastic use of the space, and a really nice production. I've directed a production myself, and it's been done a few times, and I've seen it in different places and in 10 different halls in the West Bank in Palestine. Some of them were as small as this, others were auditoriums. I really like the intimate feel of this, that you're right on top of it, and they were great. I mean, these guys were great, and so I always like to sit close up in the theater, and here, wherever you sit, you're close up.
Really, Caitlin McLeod, the director, had given you a very taut production.
Absolutely, and I've been involved in each of the productions that's happened before in one way or another, whereas in this one I just showed up for opening nights, and so it's always scary, but it was fantastic.
So what shaped you into a playwright?
Well, I don't know. I feel like in many ways I've fallen into the most of the things that are interesting in my life. I was actually trying to get into medical school at the time and was turned down. I had gone back to university. I took a few theater courses out of a kind of general interest. And then in one situation, we either had to write a 20-page paper or take part in a play. And I opted for being in the play. And I really enjoyed it. And then friends of mine, that same group of people, started a new theater company at the time called Great Canadian Theater Company. I very quickly became involved with them. I acted in several of their plays. But when they turned professional, the competition was much deeper. And so I kind of turned to writing, and I said, okay, well, I'll start writing plays. And it was a great apprenticeship because we needed plays to produce, and a group of people would tear my play apart. I mean, one time somebody just took my play and rewrote it and returned it to me and said, there, that's better, we'll do this. But it was such an intense learning experience. And then I just wrote in some collectives, but then I just went on to write on my own. And I had already, you know, from the late 60s, had political interests. And this theater company was, in at least, I would say, sympathetic to doing plays on political subjects, and very much part of the Canadian play theater movement, because before 1965, it was almost impossible to find a play written by a Canadian anywhere in the country. And so when we founded, when Great Canadian Theatre Company was founded in 75, it was founded with the idea of doing only Canadian plays, and it changed that policy when I was artistic director maybe 20 years ago, but for a long time it lasted with that policy, and I think it was a necessary policy at the time because there was a deep skepticism about doing anything by a Canadian playwright.
Fascinating. The first thing that fascinated me, there was you really went for it, didn't you, calling it the Great Canadian Theatre Company. I mean, you didn't hide behind false modesty, and it sounds like you actually fulfilled the brief that you gave yourselves.
Well, to a certain extent, I wasn't in on those discussions, and I have never liked the name. I've been in very many discussions about changing the name, but it's very hard to change a name once you have it. You know, we have in Canada things like the Great Canadian Soup Company. So
sorry, I love that.
There was a certain irony in choosing that title, which unfortunately at the time many people missed. But I'll tell you one funny story is when we went to Nicaragua, and as part of the process of writing a play that became Sandinista, our host...
Sorry, that's one of your plays, isn't it?
It's a collective that I worked on. Our host showed me a letter that he had sent to people saying, we were coming and, you know, we would like to have meetings. But it was in Spanish, and it said, El Grande Teatro Canadiense. And I said to Pepe, I think was his name, like, this means the National Theatre Company of Canada, doesn't it? And he says, yes, something like that. And I said, you know, that's not what we are. And he said, yes, I know that, but it doesn't hurt if people think that's what you are. So translated into any other language, it does in fact sound like the National Theatre. But in Canada, it has an ironic tone.
But do you mainly right now, because you have obviously had a raft of experiences being artistic director, directing plays, originally being in plays?
Yes, I've taught at university, but mainly I think of myself as a writer. And I also do journalistic writing, and it's largely on the same subjects, on political subjects, on domestic or international political subjects. But mainly I think of myself as a playwright, and especially after coming to London for the European premiere of my show here.
So what are your hopes then for this European premiere?
Well, in one sense, it's already the fulfillment of a hope. It's fantastic. It's just been such a thrill. And to meet all the people involved with this production, I feel, okay, I can retire now. I've done this. On the other hand, you know, one always has fantasies that this play will go from here to there to another place to get picked up. I think the people involved in this play are really determined to want to see it have a future beyond this. And I don't know if you saw the trailer for the show, but people have said to me, on the basis of that trailer, this would be a fantastic movie.
That's something I wanted to talk to you about. Just to finish off, we have had a fantastic wave of Scandinavian crime drama mm-hmm. shown on the big screen and the small screen from Denmark, from Sweden, and we've also had drama from Italy, we've had drama from France. I am thinking that you have already set up a really good buddy series of these two cops, and I'm wondering, you know, maybe not in the theatre, maybe on screen.
Well, for the theatre, I am thinking of writing a sequel, and, you know, if somebody wants to create a screen sequel, a series based on these two cops, a Canadian writer who read this play said, boy, you sure have the beginnings of a crime situation, crime show here. I think it's, you know, there's truth in that, but I haven't been working on that, and it would be wonderful if someone did. I think, you know, a crime show set in Palestine would be fantastic.
Israel-Palestine, yes, with our Israeli and our Palestinian detectives. I think it'd be a winner.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Arthur.
Thank you, Judy. It's been a great pleasure.